Welcome to the world of tomorrow!
Good news, everyone. It's Talking Futurama, where every mission is a suicide mission. I'm your host, the vulnerable yet spunky Bob Mackey, and this is the Talking Simpsons Patreon's chronological exploration of Futurama. Who's here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and if there's an alien out there I can't kill, I haven't met him and killed him yet.
And our special guest for today...
Yes, I'm the miniskirt-wearing, self-reliant Jeremy Parrish.
Jeremy's not sitting like a lady right now.
I'm sitting like a woman.
Oh, okay. And today's episode is When Aliens Attack.
Single female lawyer having lots of sex.
Today's episode aired on November 7th, 1999. And as always, Henry will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real-world history.
Welcome to the world of tomorrow!
Oh boy, Bobby, Tiger Woods became the first golfer since Ben Hogan in 1953 to win four straight tournaments. The One Piece anime adaptation has begun airing in Japan.
Oh boy.
And Asheron's Call is the hottest new MMORPG on Windows.
I know one of our listeners is very happy you talked about One Piece right now.
Yes. Well, is it you?
Well, me and Maddie are artists for some of our stuff.
I can't believe One Piece is still going. Mm-hmm. I don't think they've ever taken a break. Right?
It's the new Sazae-san.
Oh, God. I mean, I think he's making it his goal. Well, that creator is dead, but I think it's going on in after her death, the anime at least. But One Piece... I think it's almost 20th season on TV, and it's still like the number one show, or it's always in the top three. And the manga is like one of the best selling books in the world, not even just like comic books. There are 84 or 85 volumes off the top of my head, but yeah, One Piece is it's popular.
You're
for
counting all editions, right, including the Gutenberg One Piece.
Yes,
it is. It must be close to passing the Bible now, I have to say.
I hope so. You know what? Start putting One Piece in my hotel room instead of the Bible. I would actually read it.
Asheron's Call, I did not play. Is what was that? That's anything but a blip on the MMORPG radar.
I don't think it was a blip. I think it was around for quite a while. Okay. I can't speak to it because I don't play PC MMOs, or MMOs. But it was a pretty big game. I mean, it had some durability.
Yeah, my early college years, I remember a lot of people in my anime club playing Asheron's Call. They were, I mean, we were all so cool. It was the cool game to play. But yeah, that was back in the sort of Wild West days of MMORPGs where there were no rules and people could just hack you and steal all of your things.
Before
and
publishers learned how to properly monetize it.
Yeah, exactly. And
before everything had turned into the World of Warcraft funnel, basically.
I kind of like the funnel. That's what actually made me play Final Fantasy XIV.
Oh, it's fine. It's just a good funnel.
That's true. So Jeremy Parrish is here, of course. He's our special guest, and he is my fellow Retronaut. He's on the podcast Retronauts, and I think you know what Retronauts is if you listen to our stuff. But Jeremy, we usually ask this with our new guests. What is your Futurama viewing experience? Mm-hmm. Where did you find it? Where did you fall off, if you did fall off? People want to know.
Okay, so I didn't really watch TV after like 1993 or so because commercials make me angry.
Did you not even own a TV?
I did, but I used it for video games and
good.
For DVDs and anime. So I'm really cool. So I was aware of Futurama, but I just didn't ever watch it. And then for whatever reason, when I moved to California, it was a 3-day drive or 4-day drive from Michigan to California to start working in the games press back in 2003. I just happened to stop at a Best Buy along the way, and I had very little money on me. But for some reason, I saw the newly released season one box set of Futurama and was like, you know what? I'm going to irresponsibly spend $25 on this box set. And so I bought it and took that with me. And so once I got to San Francisco, I started watching it with my new roommate, Nick Maragos, who...
Oh, I used to work with him.
Right. Worked at 1UP and basically got me my job there and is responsible for me being in the games press.
Thank you.
So we just started watching it, and it was hilarious, and I loved it. And every episode was smart and funny, and I decided, wow, this is a good show, and I'm really sad that I didn't help support it while it was on the air, because that one extra person watching might have been the difference that would have convinced Fox, oh, we should keep this show alive.
If you bought that Miller Lite they were advertising during Futurama, it would have stayed on the air.
So I came in and watched. I picked up all the box sets, but I was too late to support it when it was on the air. And then when it did come back to be broadcast, I couldn't get into the new episodes. So that was where I dropped off, was after the direct-to-video movies. But the seasons 1 through 4 are very special to me, very precious in my heart.
Actually, you said you didn't support it, but it was those DVDs that actually got the show picked up again, because it was that brief period of time.
You're welcome.
Yeah, see? Well, you brought it back, and now you didn't like it, so it was a monkey's
That's
paw.
That's okay. It was for other people. Yeah. It was my act of altruism.
But it was that brief period of time in which it was like kind of before streaming took over, where DVDs were selling huge, and like that brought back things like Family Guy and Futurama. What else? There's like a few
well,
other things.
Well, it didn't bring back Chappelle's Show, but it made Chappelle's Show an even bigger deal.
Yeah.
Like, it was popular enough on the internet when Chappelle's Show started, but once the first DVDs came out and everyone bought them to share with friends and to watch together, like, it just became an event. Like, it was... Chappelle's Show was one of the highest-selling DVD TV shows ever,
oh, yeah.
Which, unlike... At least like Family Guy and Futurama and, well, especially Simpsons, they had like network exposure on them. Chappelle's Show just became like, I would assume how people in the 70s shared like Richard Pryor albums or just the new hot, or Carlin albums, whatever, the new hot comedy album. Just passed along. But that was the last time that DVDs and physical media could influence that kind of thing.
That's true.
I assume they had something to do with Arrested Development coming back too.
Oh yeah, probably.
Oh, yeah.
I think that just that convinced somebody that people actually like Arrested Development, because I mean, enough people watched it to keep it on the air for 3 years, but you know,
the DVDs and reruns really helped on that. But with animated series, it was always easier to bring them back, because it's like, well, we can get the cast back together, but not in the same room, but it doesn't matter because they're all voices. But
they never needed to be in the same room to begin with.
But when you're watching season 4 of Arrested Development and you're thinking to yourself, I miss when Job and Michael actually had scenes together and they actually talked to their dad, you have to deal with it, because those two, get actors in a physical space at the same time is very hard in Hollywood.
But now it's all re-edited on Netflix, and
well, there's still not going to be too many new scenes where they're together.
That's
they're
true.
It's just going to be told more directly.
I just assume the illusion will be more effective, because it's not just one episode about one character or two characters that you're staring at for 40
right,
minutes.
So things will happen concurrently, and it'll cut from one character to another.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually looking forward to that, seeing it that way. So this episode, it starts off with a very long cold opening that referenced a then extremely, extremely popular show that I think no one remembers, so let's hear it.
Counselor, I remind you that it's unethical to sleep with your client. If you really care about the outcome of the case, you should sleep with me.
Your Honor, it's bad enough to proposition a single female lawyer in court, but this is a unisex bathroom.
Overruled, Counselor.
Could you repeat that last part?
Oh, my God! You knocked Fox off the air!
Like anyone on Earth cares.
Could you repeat that last part?
This is an outrage! I demand to know what happened to the plucky lawyer and her compellingly short garment.
Due to technical difficulties, we now bring you 8 animated shows in a row.
Close to the TV, so... That last joke was, I think it was added after the fact, way, way late, because at this point, Futurama was put on, like, Animation Island on Tuesday night, where it was, I believe it was for a short time, King of the Hill, The PJs, Futurama, and Family Guy on Tuesday.
Good Lord.
And that was, like, the, sort of like the animation ghetto, where it's like, you can't come near our like, respectable live-action shows.
When it's anchored by The Simpsons, all those animated shows in a row, they work a lot better, but, yeah, on a Tuesday night, in 1999, who knew what to think of that type, all those shows
yeah.
on place.
So Jeremy, did you watch Ally McBeal?
I did not watch Ally McBeal, although I got the joke. I don't think I actually saw anything with Calista Flockhart until Supergirl came out a few years
really?
Ago.
Wow.
I
didn't watch TV. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm a Philistine.
I was watching lots of TV, but I don't think I've ever seen anything with Calista Flockhart in it. I just know all of the jokes made about her weight.
She dared to be skinny, too skinny. But, I mean, she was quite thin.
I think everyone was familiar with Calista Flockhart because of the dancing baby phenomenon.
Yeah, that really swept the internet by storm.
That was one of the first internet memes, really.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
I kiss you.
I got to say that used can't stop that feeling, which had already also been used pretty well. Been Reservoir Dogs. I never want to hear that song again. Even Guardians of the Galaxy, which in general has a pretty good hits soundtrack. When they play the Ooga Chukka, Ooga Chukka in the movie, I'm like, I'm sorry, this has been overspent in nostalgia in media now. You can't keep
it's like having an attack chopper in a Vietnam movie that plays Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
It's done already.
That's my opinion on every song in the Guardians of the Galaxy series. Like, yeah, I'm in a car with my stepdad, I get it. That's what the movie's like.
I mean, that is the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy the movies, but still, I'm not the biggest...
The car is a spaceship. It's totally different.
The car is a spaceship this time. But yeah, Henry, any Ally McBeal familiarity?
Oh, by the way, I did forget, Calista Flockhart was the girlfriend in the Birdcage.
Oh, okay.
Of the shitty son in that.
Okay. Didn't she marry...
She is still married to Harrison Ford.
Okay,
yeah.
Wow, they live in Santa Fe, I think.
She's still married to him. She is a very tolerant woman.
I mean, she's praying for one of those airplane crashes. No, she also, humorously enough in this, she did the one season of Supergirl. When they moved from CBS to WB, they had to cut some costs, and she appeared in 5 episodes and no more after that.
The Calista budget was out of control.
Well, I mean, part of the Calista budget, I think, was the CG they did to her face.
Oh,
where
no.
They, like, smoothed out
face. There's some real Barbara Streisand
gauziness
to his
scenes. But that was the only... Yeah, it was like spot-applied CG blur to make her look younger, and it didn't work.
Apparently...
I'm like, just let her be herself. She's a 50, 60-year-old woman. She can look like a 50 or 60-year-old woman.
I guess that sort of CGI is done all the time without us knowing, because in that new Pee Wee Herman movie, which was really good from a few years ago, I was reading an article about it. It's like, oh yeah, he's CGI'd to hell and back to make him look like he's not a 60-year-old man.
Oh, that makes me sad.
Yeah, but
like
it was done so well that you didn't even notice. I was just like, how does he, is he being pulled back with tape or something? Are there strategic rubber bands all
never
around him?
The back of his head, because there's like a banana clip.
It's like
back
twisted,
there.
Yeah.
But Ally McBeal, I didn't really watch the show either. I was aware of it because I would watch E! News or just keep up with all of television, like Fry. Mm-hmm. You just have to know all of TV if you never stop watching it. And yeah, the babies were there, but also there were jokes about having an all-gender restroom. Well, just men and women's restroom. I don't think they called it all-gender, but it was... and Lucy Liu was on it, and that's when people realized, like, Asian women are attractive. Huh? What's this?
A big light bulb went off.
Well, yeah, they'd never had that. And also it had, like, the usual pandering stuff of, like, she slept around on the show there for one episode. There, two girls kissed, and they're like, oh, man, well, where I could take this?
Yeah, it was a huge hit for Fox for just maybe 2 or 3 years. It burned really bright and really short, mm-hmm. but it was a really big hit for them.
I also remember it later in the series, before or after this Futurama gag about Ally McBeal. They added Robert Downey Jr. to the cast, and he famously, like, got arrested again while being on the show, and it was very awkward for him.
Wow, I guess he was still going through the troubles then, right?
Yes, yeah. His many, many troubles. It's insane to think that he is now the biggest movie star in the world.
It just shows everybody, take drugs.
They
and
cast
then...
him as himself, basically. Let's cast him as a troubled man with addiction problems, mm-hmm. and let him go.
I was always waiting for Tony Stark to actually have to deal with like alcohol abuse. I wonder if he's like, if Robert Downey Jr. got powerful enough, like, I don't want to reference my substance abuse problems anymore.
Not to derail this, but I mean, he does, he does get pretty drunk in the second movie, and
yeah.
I feel like that's a nod to it, but really his addiction is like being Iron Man, mm-hmm. so I'm okay with it.
I'm sorry. Every time we're around Bob, it turns into Marvel talk.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I mean, look, Thanos is staring down at us from the wall.
It's hard not to. But World's Blankiest Blank, and an episode title for this, When Aliens Attack, both parodies of the bottom of the barrel programming Fox had in the pre-reality show era, which were so great.
The Simpsons did a few jokes about this, like when buildings fall down, mm-hmm. things like that. That was a pre-9/11 joke, by the way.
Or when skirts fall. Yeah. I think it was World's Scariest Car Chases. I definitely remember that.
Well, when Animals Attack.
And When Animals Attack.
Alien Autopsy.
Yeah. Oh, good old Alien Autopsy, hosted by William Riker. Good times. No.
Was it?
Yep,
yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Jonathan Frakes, not actually.
Right. Obviously.
We talked about it on Talking Simpsons, and there's like a huge disclaimer. It's like, we don't know if this is real, but if it is, wow. Just, I can't believe it.
Were it to be real, this would be the greatest, like, if these things are to be accurate, then possibly this is the most world-shaking video we've ever seen.
We encourage you, the viewer, to make up your own decisions.
You choose for yourself. That is the most, like the standing back, like, from a lawsuit thing you've ever heard of. Just like, we leave it to you, the viewer.
But this episode, as I said before on this podcast, I really love episodes that are about something Fry has done in the past or something from the past coming back to have a make a plot in Futurama, and this is another example. I think I enjoy this episode, but I was talking to you guys beforehand, like, it's kind of a mess in that each act is a different episode. So it's like act one is the beach, act two is like space battles, and act three is like community theater. But I mean, it's all part of the same story. Yeah,
right.
But
it all works for me.
It all works. But I feel like as we get towards the end of a season with these animated shows, Henry and I always know it's like they're getting punchy. Mm-hmm. They don't care if things hook up in a natural way. They just want to be funny and, you know, not necessarily logical.
Well, also structurally, this is so similar to the big piece of garbage, which is like Fry saves the day with his old knowledge. They're like, there's even the same moments of like, oh, I'm looking up on the internet. Here's the answer from the year 2000. But I also do love Lauren and Inda. Like they are a great couple. They Maurice LaMarche's voice as Lur is so great, even though it's just his Morbo voice, same voice. But and Inda too. Like I just love their tense marriage every time they appear.
Is this their first appearance?
This is their first appearance. Okay. Yeah, and that they make a triumphant return in The Problem with Poplars, which I love that one. But my favorite of them is the human horn episode where they just take Fry's nose. It's so great.
That is pretty gross. It's cool to see him without a nose.
I love
that
he just pops his nose off. Like he's like, okay, here's my nose, when they are going to take his lower horn.
Oh, God. That's a racier episode from the later seasons. I guess it's Labor Day, and even Hermes is willing to take a day off, even though he says it's a holiday crammed down his throat by union thugs.
I don't like the anti-union jokes in these things.
Well, it is Hermes speaking.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. He is all management. Of course he would feel that.
The people who wrote that joke are in a union. So
yeah, that's true.
There you go.
I mean, they're clearly, with Hermes, they pretty much lampoon like super straight-laced management.
That's true, except he is a Jamaican who gets every relaxed pot-smoking Jamaican joke they can throw at him, but he also is a mega bureaucrat.
Which yeah, that's true.
I also love that the second he hears it's Labor Day, he's like, shirt off, and then when it's time for beach, like, pants off too. He's just like, strips immediately.
All has to, like, tear away clothes, but I guess the through line in all of these acts is that Fry has watched too much TV and only wants to watch TV, and the reason Leela can get him out of the house is for her to say you're covered in bed sores, which is a disgusting image, and I think about that joke a lot.
Not completely covered.
Not covered, yeah.
Not covered. Just it's such like a great defense.
Like they need better couch technology in the future if you can still get bed sores by watching too much TV.
Mm-hmm. Though HDTV still does not have better resolution than real life.
Yeah,
we haven't got there yet.
We're at 4K now, and still. Hasn't happened yet. But yeah, so a lot of this, I didn't get a lot of clips for this act because it is a lot of sight gags. It's like sort of like a Mad Magazine, like a Mad Look at the Beach, where it's just a bunch of like little beach comics, one-offs, where a lot of different things happen.
It's barely even Future Beach. It's got a lot of like just regular beach jokes in it too.
I like that they call the sunscreen that I think Leela uses cocoa butter, just so they can make the Zoidberg joke where he's covering himself with actual butter.
I do like that. Yeah, we're still in the Zoidberg is just a lobster man phase of jokes about him.
I love that he cools himself off with butter. That he apparently uses like 40 sticks of butter when he's at the beach. And
I would think he would have a natural fear of butter given his lobster-like qualities.
Though I want to pitch to Bongo Comics a comic about the supervillain governor of New York. I love that idea that they elected a supervillain, basically Mole Man by the look of him from Marvel Comics, and that he conquered the world and just dropped all of the, they put all of the landmarks in New York, and they never were put back. They've just been there for 400 years.
Well, they didn't reclaim the White House. They built a brand new White House because the White House gets blown up here on the beach, and then later in the episode, Lure actually lands in front of the White House.
Hey, yeah, wait.
That so is true. They,
were they just like, okay, just leave it there, whatever.
I assume they're like, oh, we'll just build a new one whenever that governor was assassinated or whatever happened to him. But yeah, they're at Monument Beach. There's a lot of sight gags. Bender plays hide and seek with Hermes, and it's just to get rid of him.
Leaves Hermes to die, basically, or to never be found again.
Zoidberg pops volleyballs with his claws because he can't play.
I love how Leela smashes Farnsworth in the face with a volleyball. She is not holding back on this 140-year-old man.
Bender makes them hamburgers. These are all just like psych gags. I'm just listing them all off. I do like Fry's line, just like my dad used to make until McDonald's fired him. So yeah. His dad was just stealing food and bringing it home, I think. That's
oh,
the joke.
Okay. And though they work a little too hard on the fiery metal ass because,
yeah.
I don't know, sometimes being hot hurts Bender and then other times he feels nothing. It's there's some inconsistencies in this show.
It's whatever they need.
It's the rule of funny, I believe.
Yeah.
That's what it's called.
I think they work too hard on drawing topless Amy in
oh,
this
yes.
scene. It's a bit
yes.
racy. It's a bit ribald.
I mean, this is a low-level racy Amy joke compared to many of the later ones.
I got to think in somewhere on the internet and let me know out there. Smashing hamburger buns up against your breasts has to be a fetish for some guys.
Oh, have you seen my blog?
Oh my God, is that on Patreon too?
I'm certain it's out there. I guess that clothes are just spray on now. Is that the gag that is
yeah.
spray on clothes? I mean, it's just to ogle her breasts longer.
Or
what it's about. But
there's like the slogan, "Oh, that was just painted on." Like if someone's wearing really like tight or revealing clothes.
And then, but it only insults her is that she looks French.
Yeah, French.
Just like. Yeah, French. I love a reaction to that.
And Fry, this is all leading to something, by the way. Fry builds a sandcastle. And
I love how childish he looks building the sandcastle. He's like, he has a little pail. He's just
and they're all very proud of him.
Yeah, it's.
But this is when the aliens are introduced. I do love Bender's line where I instead of saying cheese, he says pretend you're happy, which is the exact same sentiment behind cheese. But I do like pretend you're happy before taking a picture because it's like smile for no reason. It's yeah. Bender is like seeing through like the logic of this like antiquated expression or this kind of ritual people
or maybe
do.
Just replace say cheese in the future. That's just what you say
pretend
in the year
you're
3000.
Happy.
Pretend you're happy. We should popularize that, Bob. I also did like the gag of their play on the classic kicking sand in the face. Beach bully guy.
Oh, I do have that. That's the one bit of this I did pull.
So much sand.
Say, dollface, how'd you like to make time with a real man?
No, I'm not attracted to bullies, no matter how big and handsome they are.
It's okay, Leela, go ahead. I got a lot of work to do here.
sir, you don't understand. I'm a professional beach bully. I pretend to steal your girl, you punch me, I go down, she swoons, you slip me $50.
$50? Not even if she was my girlfriend. You take her.
Fry, although I suppose we could go for a walk on the beach.
No thanks, ma'am. I'm actually gay.
And he just runs away.
Yeah. That is from an old like Charles Atlas ad, mm-hmm. one of the more classic comic book ads, where it is a man, a 90-pound weakling, getting mm-hmm. sand kicked in his face on the beach, and then he shows that bully by, I assume he murders him or drowns him.
I mean, given Fry's dietary habits, I doubt he's a 90-pound weakling.
That's true.
But the this whole sequence is interesting because I, watching it again, I actually can't remember when Fry decided he was desperately in love with Leela, because here he's just like, whatever. I don't care.
I think the $50 part of the equation is what made him forget about that. But Titanic episode.
He doesn't want to push back against the bully who's harassing him. He's like, I just want to build a sandcastle.
I think at this point Fry is situationally attracted to Leela. If there's a situation where they're together and they could possibly like kiss or do other things, he's into it. But
there's a certain level of romance. I mean, he did get swept up in the romance of Titanic as well.
That's
her,
true. Like, that nebula.
Yeah, exactly. I think if she hadn't started by kissing him and pretending to be his girlfriend in that episode, maybe then he wouldn't have been as much into it. But yeah, I think I also think it's more that his selfishness supersedes all that. He's like, I don't really care. I'm trying to make sandcastles, and you're definitely not worth $50 to me.
He's a very one-track mind, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Of course, what's the inflation rate in the future? Because $50 is worth like a penny.
They don't. I think
they're not very consistent about that.
Well, at some point, aliens. Aliens destroyed the Earth twice since Fry was frozen. And I think the economy restarted each time.
We had a little bit about this in the inflation thing, and that it must have reset at some point, because when Fry becomes a billionaire thanks to interest on his bank account, that they must have just reset the worth of money. Otherwise, his $1 billion would be nothing.
And there's the episode 300 Big Boys, right, where they each get $300 from the president. But so it would be nothing in terms of real inflation.
It must have reset at some point. This episode also reminded me of how much I have not thought of Independence Day since 1999.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, does anybody really know what this is from anymore? I mean, I feel
they
like...
They even made a sequel like last year or 2 years ago, but nobody remembers.
Nobody from the original movie was in it, I don't think. Or maybe just a few.
Like one or two people.
Yeah,
yeah, they brought back...
the president guy?
Yeah, they brought back Bill Pullman. They brought back... the guy from Taxi.
They didn't bring back Will Smith, and that's all anyone cared about.
Yeah,
what about Harvey Fierstein?
Will Smith was the only one missing. I think even Angela Bassett was back.
Oh, wow. Well, Harvey Fierstein, he died in the... Wait, did he die in the first movie?
Boy, I cannot remember.
Write in, let us know.
Was he the biplane pilot?
That was Randy Quaid.
Okay. He definitely
Harvey
died.
Fierstein was the gay guy always worried about his mother. Very, very progressive role.
That's right.
I gotta call my mother.
I don't think he's in that movie. You should be happy they even brought back Judd Hirsch.
Oh, yes.
Oh, but Brent Spiner is back in that movie, even though he died in Independence Day. That's
I can't believe that. But do they have no integrity, these Hollywood sharks?
I don't think Dean Devlin does, no.
But yeah, so the aliens land on Monument Beach, or they hover above it. They destroy all the monuments, even Fry Sandcastle. At this point, it's clear that they mean business, and there is a news report about it.
People of Earth, I am Lur of the planet Omicron Persei 8. Is this thing on? Now then, we want the one you call McNeil. Give us McNeil, or we will lay waste to your cities with our anti-monument laser. We demand McNeil!
As I was saying, mankind would sooner perish than kowtow to outrageous alien demands for this McNeil, whoever he is. Am I right? And now, the man who will lead us in our proud struggle for freedom, fresh from his bloody triumph over the pacifists of the Gandhi Nebula, 25-star General Zap Brannigan.
Whenever he's introduced, it's always like he's fresh off of a new genocide from helpless people. I think the last one was like the assisted living nebula killing the people there.
Yes, and before that, it was the genocide of his own troops against the Killbots.
Yeah. But everyone loves him, apparently, more than his own troops.
I mean, this also was another, like, Independence Day reference, not just the blowing up of monuments, but having a right before the scene, the president gives the anti-president speech from Independence
Day.
It's time to knuckle down and really dig deep. And now that Omicron Persei 8 joke, I didn't get it at the time, but I think it is a reference to SETI Alpha 5 from Star Trek.
No, SETI Alpha 5 was destroyed.
No, it was SETI Alpha 6 that destroyed, and they were on 5, right? Or were they on 6?
Jeremy would
know. This is SETI Alpha 6.
Oh, okay.
Jeremy just watched like every Star Trek thing ever, right? Recently?
I'm still in the process.
You're in Voyager
Wrath of Khan
now?
Was a while ago. Yeah, I'm up toward the end of Voyager.
Okay, wow. That's still a lot.
My goodness.
It is a lot. It's like 700 plus episodes. Almost as many as The Simpsons.
Yeah. Oh, man.
The entirety of Star Trek altogether is
almost
The Simpsons.
So this president, I think I don't know if we see him again in the Ahead in the Polls episode, but
I mean, there's a reason we won't see him again.
There is a thing called continuity.
Yeah, but I like how they came up with a President McNeil just for the sake of this misunderstanding. It's just like he's the president of the entire country they live in this show, but they're just like, just name him that for just this episode.
Yeah, you would think he'd end up being like Mayor Poopenmeyer, who is a consistently appearing character with a joke name as well.
And he's not much of a character outside. He's a self-involved coward, basically.
Yeah, which is fine.
So really, like any president.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I also was, well, I guess we'll get to it, but I was shocked to see the president get murdered on that was great.
Duh, he got murdered.
Yeah. That's why Nixon has to replace him.
I swear to God, I did watch this and take notes and capture all the clips. But here is Zap Brannigan's plan.
But if there's an alien out there I can't kill, I haven't met him and killed him yet. But I can't go it alone. That's why I'm ordering every available ship to report for duty. Anyone without a ship should secure a weapon and fire wildly into the air.
Well, you heard the windbag. We've been drafted. Everyone into the ship.
Whoa, 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 hold on! I refuse to fight. I'm a conscientious objector.
A what?
You know, a coward.
Since this is an emergency, all robots will now have their patriotism circuits activated.
It is every robot's duty to give his life for the good of humanity. Oh, crap.
I used Bender's line a lot in the early 2000s as a young man at my grocery store job when people would tell me, you should sign up and go over there. And I was like, I'm a conscientious objector, you know, a coward. Because I don't want to die.
I don't want to die. I am also a conscientious objector slash coward. That's a lot of judgment on conscientious objectors. That's
consider the word. Source.
Yes. I don't know. I don't like... There's a lot of reasons to hate our current president. I hate even making fun of him as a draft dodger because it's like, but there were good people who didn't want to go to Vietnam.
Well, you can make fun of the fact that he manipulated the system to dodge the draft.
I feel like jokes about war have a very different flavor before 9/11 and before Iraq Part 2.
Just seeing things explode, it's in public places. It's just all animated. One of the weirdest ones to watch again after 9/11, if you saw it before, it is Godzilla 1998, because they treat it like it's nothing. They're like, oh, there's 17 9/11s basically happen in that movie. Just all these buildings get knocked over. And there's scenes of like a mayor going like, we're not canceling the Rangers game. Like, we got to keep, they act like everything wouldn't stop when building explodes.
Now we know how much of everything shuts down. But I do like when Zap Brannigan is surprised by the different colors of people. It's like, some of you are black, some of you are white, you're brown,
you're silver.
Yeah. I guess he wasn't expecting brown or silver people on his ship.
He doesn't look into any, everything's a surprise to Zap. He is an idiot. He's quite a dumb person.
But he does make sure to tell everybody, don't destroy Kiv. Unless they have to. So here is a little bit more of Zap.
The key to victory is discipline, and that means a well-made bed. You will practice until you can make your bed in your sleep.
You mean while I'm sleeping in it?
You won't have time for sleeping, soldier. Not with all the bed-making you'll be doing. The alien mothership is in orbit here. If we can hit that bullseye, the rest of the dominoes will fall like a house of cards. Checkmate. Now, like all great plans, my strategy is so simple an idiot could have devised it. On my command, all ships will line up and file directly into the alien death cannons, clogging them with wreckage.
Well, wouldn't it make more sense to send the robots in first and...
Sir, I volunteer for a suicide mission! Ah! Cut it out!
I guess Zap's one go-to plan is always suicide.
Yeah, basically, just like, every mission with him is a
someone
suicide.
Someone else's suicide.
Yeah.
I do like the very understated joke that his plan is so simple that even an idiot could have thought
yes.
of
it. Like all of them.
There's no like mugging at the camera. It's just like, oh, right, yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of jokes like this on the show that we're just discovering for the first time where it's like, oh, that tiny bit of the sentence is part of the joke.
That's my line of the episode, though. The House of Cards, Bullseye, his incredibly labored metaphor.
The most tortured of metaphors. So that gets our line of the show jingle.
Oh, wait, you're serious? Let me laugh even harder.
We do get a bit more of the Fry watches too much TV stuff in this act, in which Fry is like pretending he's the famous female captains of ships and also Xena.
Yeah, he can't think of one man he would want to be of television heroes. But oh also in that in the scene where they're planning the assault, obviously it's a reference to Star Wars and the looking at the plans for the Death Star and saying what their assault's going to be. That's a reference. They even are just given just straight up the helmets from the red team of pilots in Star Wars. Or episode 4, if you're a dork.
A New Hope.
Yes. When Bender strangles Fry, I swear for a second he has the same drawing they give to Bart's face when he gets strangled by Homer.
I could see that. But they end up blowing up what they think is the mothership, and it turns out to be the Hubble telescope, which is a... I don't know if the Hubble telescope was redesigned to look like one of the Omicron Persei people's...
The joke doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense, but it's funny.
It is. My theory is they should have blown it up off screen so we didn't see it, because it doesn't make any sense.
Hubble telescope jokes were all the rage in the late 90s.
There was a joke about it.
It was expensive and it kept breaking.
It was a boondoggle.
Yeah, there's a joke about it in the Mystery Science Theater movie where they run into it, right?
Yeah. And he has to get the hands out to try to fix it, and he ends up destroying it. And I think I think on the show too, anytime something like dropped from the sky in a joke on Mystery Science Theater, it'd be like, oh, the Hubble fell again.
Yeah.
of sex and spaceships. Only one man has the onions. His name is Futurama.
And I'm his friend Jesus.
He came from another network with assloads of robot monkey fun.
I'm boned.
Four nights a week at 11 Eastern. Electrifying wonders fill the screen.
What the hell are you talking about?
Futurama on Cartoon Network. Do you have anything better to do? We didn't think so.
But Leela is actually the conscientious objector in this scenario. She's like, we'll just go home and get blown up there.
So there's so much action in this scene that it's so like ambitious that they're going to do like a full on for on a television budget, a like Death Star trench run style, like space battle with lasers. And
yeah, I mean, they even have the same gun emplacements that you like the kind of cubic gun emplacements that turn and pivot like on the Death Star.
Yeah. People are blowing up a ton in it. Like they kind of have to cut away to it faster. Or think about like, wait, all the people. Guy in that slurm truck's dead. Like they're just dead. Yeah. And or I guess you have to think a robot was in all of those.
I hope so.
And but the reveal of the real mothership is actually a pretty just cool, like, menacing shot. There's not really a joke to it. It's just really good looking.
It looks like it's part of the Field of Stars, but then it rotates down. You see it's a giant mothership.
Yeah, it's interesting because you mentioned this is toward the end of the season. And we were just talking before the recording about Neon Genesis Evangelion and Kari Kano and how they ran out of budget toward the end and like started doing super cheap shots, like, you know, Shinji sitting in an elevator for a minute without any motion whatsoever or puppets or whatever. But here you get toward the end and I guess they had a budget surplus and they were like, let's go all in on a CG space battle.
They
Why
had
not?
That Matt Groening money.
Yeah, right.
He was trusted to
so
use
the
it
writers
well.
Might have been tired, but I guess the animators weren't. And they still didn't run out
They were
of
still
money.
Really tired.
Well, you know, when they budget for animation, sometimes they will, or even for an ATV show, they're like, we're going to have certain episodes that are going to be very expensive and, you know, we're going to do some bottle episodes or something really cheap along the way so that we can reserve some funding for this, you know, for this big set piece.
There's not a lot of CGI in the Willy Wonka parody, I'll say that much. Yeah. It's a funny episode, but it's not like a very flashy episode.
They take it a little easier.
Yeah. So Leela and the crew return and we see their replacements immediately.
You'll be the captain, you'll be the delivery boy, and you'll be the alcoholic, foul-mouthed... Oh, God, you're alive! I mean, thank God you're alive! Sorry, check back in 3 days, a week at the most.
I love
we want McNeil! Stop stalling!
And now, a rebuttal from President McNeil.
The people of Earth remain united in my refusal to hand over myself. Total annihilation is a small price to pay compared with...
Clubbed and put in a bag. Yeah, my refusal, united in my refusal to hand over myself is a great sentence. Sorry, yeah. Jeremy, please.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I didn't realize you were still running the clip, that I like the professor's total pragmatism about replacing the crew is like a running thing, because there's also the Killer Bee episode,
right.
The Giant Wasp, where you find out that the current crew is a replacement for the ones who were digested by a giant space wasp.
And that pays off that joke in the first episode, the very end, just how expendable they are.
Yeah, they're always expendable. He always expects them to die. They almost die most episodes. And so I just love the designs, like the slightly cheaper bee model designs for all of the characters.
The fake Bender is kind of cute.
It's
yeah, it's like if you had figures of the cast of Futurama, this would be the dollar store equivalent. Like, everything is kind of off model and the wrong color, but you're like, I know who that's supposed to be.
Especially the robot, you're like, well, he wouldn't be, he's not merchandisable, that's not a toy. But
yeah, so the president is taken to the mothership and immediately murdered when they know he's not Jenny McNeil.
When they capture the president, it's like, it's really like a military coup. They're just like, oh,
it is, yeah.
The leader of the army has replaced the president and is going to give him up, but everybody's cool with it.
It's sort sort of like the, I mean, Zap is from the Democratic Order of Planets, which is kind of like the UN. So it's like the UN. It's what every Republican fears, the UN taking over.
Well, that's why they got Nixon as the replacement president.
Oh, my God.
That's how it happens.
It all makes sense. But
it would have been better off with McNeil the coward, try refusing to give himself
up. I wonder
up.
If he was a Democrat. But this is what happens after McNeil is murdered.
Give us McNeil!
That was McNeil.
No, McNeil, the single female lawyer.
She wears miniskirts and is promiscuous.
Really?
Miniskirts? That sounds familiar.
Surely you know McNeil. She is an unmarried human female struggling to succeed in a human male's world.
Maybe that's just her excuse for being incompetent.
Silence! You will accept no more decoys. This is the McNeil.
Wait, I know her.
You do not, you big fat liar. You don't know anyone. All you do is watch TV.
That's where I know her from. She's Jenny McNeil. She was a character on a TV show back in the 20th century. Single female lawyer.
Well, if they're hoping to see a TV show that hasn't existed for 1,000 years, they are royally boned.
And for the viewers, Farnsworth explains how the aliens got the signal, but then Fry's just like, yeah, it's magic, I understand. He refuses to even think about it.
This is the idea of, you know, aliens receiving transmissions from Earth at light speed or whatever, many, many years after the fact is a... I feel like that's kind of like a recurring concept that you see in a lot of sci-fi. Of course, nothing comes to mind immediately, but I feel like I've seen that a few other places.
One comes to mind for me, though wasn't sci-fi. It was the Nickelodeon show Pete and Pete. It was that Pete was so excited that older Pete was excited at the idea that an old Johnny Unitas football game would fly into outer space and reach this certain place 1,000 years from now. And he was just like, isn't that crazy that somebody in 1,000 years will see this football game if they have it to the right wires? And he asked some guy who played in that game, he's like, I don't think about that stuff. I think about football. I don't know.
I bet there was jangly alt-rock playing during that scene.
all the best that they could afford.
They got some good bands. The Magnetic Fields, I think the Apples
they
and Stereo.
Them a couple times. Yeah. I also like that Zap is just excited
really?
At the idea of a woman with a short skirt. He's like, her short skirts are not as short as his. He wears shorter skirts than she does.
He has a very long tunic.
Yes, I actually love the designs of everybody wearing the Zap costume, especially for Bender. He just puts on gloves, has shoulder pads, and a dress, nothing else.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the idea there was to make fun of like the Star Trek female uniforms
in
the old series, where like, you know, Uhura and Nurse Chapel are wearing miniskirts, and then the dudes are wearing tunics and trousers.
And they also have like purses in some cases with the OG.
Space purses.
Oh, actually, in the very early episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, you see like some men wearing basically those uniforms. They're like long tunics with bare legs, and I think maybe for obvious reasons they very quickly phased those out, but I think the idea there was one of like, you know, that the Gene Roddenberry like sex utopia of the future concept. Mm-hmm. He really pushed for that, and the network was like,
this is still 1987.
Women
dude.
Work for men, and they do. Like, it's still the Mad Men era.
So they go on the internet and look up facts about single female lawyer.
Check this out. Back in 1999, the season finale of Single Female Lawyer was interrupted by technical problems. Apparently, some idiot spilled Coke on the transmitter.
Beer. I would think.
They must just want to see that episode. Let's find a tape and give it to them.
There aren't any copies left.
No, there wouldn't be. Most videotapes from that era were damaged in 2443 during the second coming of Jesus.
You know, I saw the first 30 seconds of that episode. If I could make up an ending, maybe we could act it out ourselves.
So they do exactly that in the third act.
First off, I love how old that computer search is in the year 3000.
As with all media, it's a current Mac OS interface. It is OS 9 or OS 8, maybe.
In general, the Futurama writers were definitely on the Mac side of things, I think. They were, before it was cool, guy. I don't know, in 99, had it gotten cool again?
It was starting to become not a complete joke. The iMac debuted in 1998. And the iMac was kind of a joke for, you know, serious computer users, but it became like the point at which Apple was no longer hemorrhaging money and was actually making money again. So I don't know that Macs were cool at that point. No one who was like serious about anything except graphic design was using them, but you know, it had that plucky plucky sort of undercurrent of support.
Hmm. And that return of Jesus, I wonder if that was the sweet zombie Jesus.
It is, yes. the very first time I heard the sweet zombie Jesus, I was like, what? And then I realized later, like, oh, he actually came back. So, yes, there was a zombie Jesus.
I like that, how this is that's a footnote in this world's history. Just mm-hmm. like, yeah, Jesus came back. And that the only thing that was notable is all the VHS tapes were, like, demagnetized or whatever.
The second coming of Christ did not change much in the world of Futurama for some reason. Or maybe these are all the people left behind.
All the cursed
this
people.
This is actually the sequel to the book Left Behind.
It's so much better than the source material there.
I
love that this episode, it's a Star Wars and Independence Day thing that then transitions into literally, let's put on a show.
Exactly.
Which is its own genre of movie.
And everyone's very excited for it, too. I mean, are they filming this in the Planet Express, like, garage?
I guess
I don't know
so.
Where they're filming this at all.
Some storage unit for it.
I mean, once they took the 5-megawatt radio transmitter out of the attic, they probably had a lot of space.
That's right. For some reason, Farnsworth did have one of those. I do like Lur putting the old-timey antenna on his ship to get ready to watch the show.
Very dutifully, like,
I mean, we'll see it later. Well, number one, I like how this emperor of a planet is really into American TV from the 90s, but also he's very credulous about everything he's watching.
And they have the technology to raise the temperature of planet Earth 1,000,000 degrees per day.
For 5 days.
But they have to stick an antenna on their mothership to see it. It's so great.
Yeah, I always like the mix of old and new technology in these shows.
That's a plot point from Star Trek The Motion Picture, where they couldn't get the transmission from the Voyager probe because it was like transmitting in old radio waves, and they were in the future using subspace, and they were like, how do we get this message?
Classic feature.
There's a great joke in this that's all visual that I didn't capture. It is camera one, camera two, camera three. Mm-hmm. I real gut laugh out of me this time.
I finally realized, like, oh, the third camera's his penis. I get it.
Anything can be Bender's penis in these episodes, we've decided. It's antenna.
You know, on the Star Trek movie reference, as long as we're talking about that, there was a deleted scene in this episode about they saved the whales too much and that they can't... had to make fake beaches because they're too full of whales now.
Oh man, we're doing an episode about the deleted scenes, right? At some point. Okay, yeah.
We will do that.
Stay tuned, patrons. But here's
The Let's Put On a Show. Also, Fry is a much better writer in this episode than he is in the Brain Invasion one.
Yeah, everything is spelled correctly. I was really surprised.
No raisin.
He could at least write two pages of dialogue that people could read in this one. But yes, here's part one of their little show they put on.
Single female lawyer. Fighting for her client, wearing sexy mini skirts and being self-reliant. Hey, I'm pretty good.
Jenny McNeil, you are charged with jury tampering in last week's case on account of your hot, naked affair with the foreman. How do you plead?
Your Honor, I move for a mistrial on the grounds that I'm also having a hot, naked affair with the foreman of this jury.
I'll see you during the recess.
I do like the term hot, naked affair.
Yeah, that's all Fry remembers from the show, is that Ally McBeal was promiscuous. That was all it was, which I mean, I don't think she slept with everybody on the show. That's a heightening for this.
Right. Well, this was, you know, concurrent with or before Sex and the City, and the idea of, like, women on television actually taking, you know, agency for their own sexuality? Unthinkable.
It's impossible.
Yeah, like,
it was a pretty bold idea for network television.
The woman on the show was not the thing being pursued, you know, it was the main character, and she, yeah, like Jeremy said, had sexual agency, and, you know, it was sex positive, I think. I mean, I'm sure if you go back now, it'll be totally backwards 90s gender politics, too.
Well, David E. Kelly liked to have it both ways on his shows, of just like, we have sexy, fun, and women with agency, but they will also be shamed at some point, and people will make them feel bad. There's a great joke about them installing a water cooler to talk around, which also just feels so, I don't know, retro to me. Like, there isn't, other than Game of Thrones, I feel like there isn't a water cooler show anymore.
It's all Marvel stuff now.
Well, even that, I guess that is.
Listen, because all the cool stuff streams, so everyone watches it all at once.
Yeah, but the last time I worked at a place where there was a water cooler to talk around, it was so fractured. It was like, Well, over the weekend, I watched all the episodes of Punisher. But then the other person says, well, I was watching American Gods. And the other person says, I was watching Drag Race. Another person said, I was watching wrestling. Like, nobody was watching the same thing, and certainly not, like, on appointment on a Sunday night.
From my perspective, everyone is just talking about Marvel movies. Well, always, I mean, constantly.
Infinity War is brand new. Bob, give us a sec. We'll talk
about it. I'm not trying to be a hater, okay? I have no way to enter these conversations.
There's a new Star Wars coming out. We'll talk about that.
I'm sure I'll see that one.
How come it's a Solo movie and not a Lando movie? They really blew that.
That's what everybody is saying. I agree. Like, it's we'll see how good this movie is itself too.
I'm sure the fourth director they rotated in will do a great job of finishing that movie.
Ron Howard.
Yes, and he made The Grinch, you know, and that fantastic film.
He knows how to safely complete a film. I will give Ron Howard that.
But here is the second part of Single Female Lawyer.
Your witness, Prosecutor Ramirez.
Gracias. Single female lawyer, where were you on the night of August 23rd?
Sleeping with you.
Aha!
He eats her eye. Her googly eye.
Getting back to the matter, if it please the court, Fry, there's nothing else here. You only wrote 2 pages of dialogue.
Well, it took an hour to write. I thought it would take an hour to read.
What are we supposed to do now?
I don't know. Just say anything. As long as it's compelling and mesmerizing. A tour de force. What say you, single female lawyer?
I say, I'm giving up the law. And I'm giving up being single. Your Honor, will you marry me?
Dun, dun, dun.
I always think of that Fry line when I spend a long time writing something and only have a paragraph. Like, it took an hour to write.
It's a great writer joke from though I do, they're mad at Fry for not writing more, but I do blame them for not reading the script before starting the airing the teleplay.
Yeah, they're putting their fate in Fry's hands, which
history
should show, even at this point in the series, like, it's a very bad idea.
Yeah, I also love the gag about when Lauren and Inda are watching the show, and he's like, why does she not just eat them? And her response is, men are from Omicron Persei 7, women are from Omicron Persei 9, which I love that as it's a tired joke, men are from Mars, women are from Venus, but the placement of those in order, it is the planets next to them.
Oh, I never thought of it that way. Wow.
One is on one side of Omicron Persei 8 and one is on the other. Hmm.
Just like Mars and Venus are around Earth. It is a perfectly mathematically correct joke, which Futurama is very good at doing.
I wonder how bad that book is today and totally wrong about everything. It's very, like, essential about gender.
I feel like you should do a podcast about that.
Yeah.
Wow.
One chapter of that book every week. We reread it.
Well, I mean, it is saying, like, if you're a man, all of these things are true about you. If you're a woman, all of these things are true. There's nothing in the middle or around that. It's just two things. You can be two things.
Yeah. The only thing I remember from it was seeing in an interview with him once, he said, like, women are like the moon, they're ready at night. Men are like the sun, they rise in the morning. And then you do like a hand motion to indicate an erection.
A boner. Oh boy, yes. I get it. I do love, as a TV snob and as a very snobbish teen, I did like Fry's. Fry does not like this choice they're making in this episode. And he says, clever things make them feel stupid and unexpected things make them feel scared. He's talking about television. He's talking about most of Fox's programming.
He's talking about everything, really.
Yes. Yeah. Any sort of content.
I think that's the Futurama writers were feeling at this point in writing their show. We talked about it on the iRoommate episode, how they got so many notes from Fox, they hated it. And then they tried to make it for all those notes, and then Fox hated that episode too. So they're probably used to thinking, like, we're too smart for TV, we're getting all these notes about trying to be stupider and less predictable. And so now they're having Fry, the idiot, tell you that.
And you probably heard the past episodes of this podcast. Everyone on this show is from Harvard, and three of them have PhDs, and the rest have master degrees. They are clearly too smart for any room, especially a TV room.
I've heard Dan Harmon, when he talks about making Community, he at first was very much just like, we're such a better show than all that other crap out there. Why are people watching 2.5 Men at Big Bang Theory and not our show? And then later in interviews, he realized, like, well, some people got home from a really long day at work and they don't want a television show that challenges them or tells them, like, hey, your life sucks. They're like, I know my life sucks. I want to just laugh at something and not think about the shitty job I just worked.
I want to watch upper class people making jokes.
Yeah, that's all they want.
But Fry gives a nice little speech about TV.
TV audiences don't want anything original. They want to see the same thing they've seen 1,000 times before.
What you talking about, Fry?
Trust me on this. While other people were out living their lives, I wasted mine watching TV. Because deep down, I knew it might one day help me save the world. Plus, I would have lost my workman's comp if I had gone outside. Now just read these cue cards.
I do like that little detail about Fry's life in the 20th century. He was faking like disability to just scam the government.
Yeah,
it's a very Fry, very very Fry lifestyle kind of thing.
It fits with the previous joke about his personal timeline of having time off from ages 21 through 24.
Yeah.
And he's also like Homer in scamming workman's comp, though. I wonder what Fry's fake disability was if it wasn't obesity. What did he go for?
Mm.
But I've never identified more with Fry when he's talking about instead of living life, he just watched television.
That's why we're doing
teens and 20s.
Yeah, that's why we're doing these podcasts. We're trying to make profit off of that lost youth.
What a profit it is. Yes. Now. I should, not unlike Fry saving the world, I should tell my younger self, like, it was all worth it watching all these again and again.
Keep watching TV. So here's the finale of Single Female Lawyer.
Miss McNeil, I'm afraid I must decline your offer of marriage, for you see, I'm dying. Cough, then fall over dead.
My God, he's dead.
I will now make my closing statement. With my fiancé deceased, I hereby return to my single female lawyer career, no matter what any man says.
We find a defendant, vulnerable yet spunky.
Hooray! And cut!
I like the visual gags in there that you can't see concerning Professor Farnsworth. Like, when Zoidberg's like, he's dead! Farnsworth, like, taps his own wrist to see if he's still alive. And then when Leela is like, with my fiancé dead, he's just, like, back there smiling.
Yeah, I do like that. He doesn't really understand. I guess Fry was not good at writing stage directions.
Farnsworth isn't an actor. He just is standing back. Maybe he's thinking about all the times he was forced to mate and procreate from previous alien.
That's true. Did not happen this time.
That was a gross joke. I don't like thinking about Farnsworth having sex.
Yes, but I do like Lur gives the episode a C+. Good, not great. I think they're making fun of Entertainment Weekly or something with that.
Yes.
Probably.
Yeah.
Though now it just sounds like the instant reviews of Twitter or any social media person just saying like that they watched the show, like, these are my thoughts, my media thoughts on the show, boom.
Anything less than an A- is not worth your time anyway.
Mm-hmm. It's certainly not worth the elixir for eternal life.
And one of the so we talked about the jokes about Zoidberg. He's not the character he will become. One of the jokes is everyone blames him for everything, even though he didn't do it. And this one it was like, way to overact, Zoidberg. They're blaming him for not getting the immortal life potion or whatever that the Omicrons have.
These are fun jokes, but I'm still waiting for Zoidberg to be the poor, smelly monster that he will turn into.
A very needy man, too.
Also very needy.
And lonely. But I do love the celebration. A Jewish man and a Muslim man are hugging. A nun and a clown are hugging in the streets.
Okay.
It's a nice choice. And Fry says the secret of all TV shows, everything goes back to normal at the end. They pull back. Everything's in ruins. But of course, in the next episode, it'll all be fine because it is a cartoon. But
in the future, they repair things faster, you know?
It's nanomachines, right, Jeremy?
Yep, that's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Oh, my God. What are you leaning in to say that? Okay. We've podcasted together too much, I think.
You guys are... It's weird to be on two... This is one with your two regular podcasting partners.
It's true.
You're in like a gray area.
Who's the most powerful? Vote at home. So this episode, guys, again, I think it's kind of a mess, but it's a fun mess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to know what Ally McBeal is to find this funny because it's not really about Ally McBeal. It's about like, let's write the worst possible dialogue and courtroom scene ever.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't go with the obvious like dancing baby jokes. There's not a single dancing baby reference in this, which I think is really admirable because that's the Ally McBeal thing people knew.
And there were no jokes about Calista Flockhart or like her body, which shows a lot of self-control, actually.
Yeah, that's a difference between it and its compatriot Family Guy, which I will never miss a chance to knock. I think, you know, Family Guy did it, and I'm sure they did do an Ally McBeal joke about her being too skinny, and it's just, it seems like in the writer's room for Family Guy, they're like, well, we have a subject, Ally McBeal. Skinny joke. Got it.
Bam.
Okay. Dancing baby calls her skinny. Got it. Okay. There,
first joke, best joke.
Move on.
That's how it works.
They pile on some more stuff. Same with in the next episode, the Slurm episode. Same deal. Like, it's there. You do more than just remind people of Willy Wonka.
Mm-hmm. I love that one. That's coming up next. But yeah, this episode, we all like it then? I think it's good. Yeah.
I'm a fan. I mean, even if it is, as you say, kind of a mess and jumps all over the place, I feel like there is that through line leading everything, and You know, the aliens do show up in Act 1, so when they reappear in Act 3, it makes sense. And they're fighting them in Act 2. So
that's true.
So they're the constant presence there. And, you know, individually, like scene by scene, there's a lot of really funny writing and a lot of really funny, like, reaction shots and visual gags. So.
And they love Zap Brannigan, too. This is his fourth appearance in this season, maybe? It could be just third.
Just third.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention, I love every time Zap returns, Bender has to say, hey, you had sex with him, right?
Yeah, like, it's I mean, it could go across the line into, like, shaming the way that, you know, Ally McBeal does, but it's more like Leela acknowledges that she made a dumb mistake and her friends are never going to let her live it down.
There's something Zap says in this episode, a word that ends with a D that he says another D sound. It's like, protected. I didn't get that, but I love that it was that excessive. That's Billy West.
Also, when he's the one, when he hits on Leela of, like, we want to make love one more time before we go to what could be our deaths. And the way he is standing of just like, if he were anatomically correct, you would be seeing his genitals, how high he has got his legs up.
There must be some like strategically placed cups in those uniforms or something.
They must have like some fancy future fabric that keeps them in place.
I think he wears it kilt style.
So yes,
that's what Kif sees when he looks up his skirt.
You're
that's
right.
True.
I hope there's a furnished basement, you know, as Bart would say. Thanks for listening, folks. It's been Talking Futurama. Thank you so much for supporting us at Patreon. We got one more episode to go in our Talking Futurama miniseries. It might return. We're gonna be taking a short break after this miniseries to just be productive in other ways, like live shows and trips and things like that. But please stay on board. We got so much extra stuff to give you. But Jeremy, you're a special guest. Tell us where we can find you.
Oh.
And what you do and all that good stuff.
Sure. If you enjoyed my interjections about Star Trek here, you'll love them on Retronauts at retronauts.com and on iTunes. You can also hear Bob there because he's on the show.
I'm on it, and the iTunes reviews love me.
They're huge fans.
They're like, listen to the Bob episodes.
That's right.
Zero in on those.
It's the Bob Club. So like every podcast nowadays, Retronauts is supported on Patreon, patreon.com/retronauts. That's like astronaut, but old. Check out the show even if you don't want to support us. Just listen, because we talk about old video games in a smart and clever way. Mm-hmm. And I believe that podcast fans are not afraid of smart and different things.
That's true. They're the true intellectuals.
They're different than TV watchers.
Henry, where can we find you?
Oh, I mean, you know, these listeners know, HENERYG on Twitter. You can follow me there. And that's where anytime a new episode of this goes live, I will tweet it out, or any of our other great stuff, like What a Cartoon. Give a listen to that as well, folks.
Yeah, we often tease what we're going to be doing up next sometimes. So, you know, follow us both on Twitter. I'm Bob Servo. But yeah, thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next week with Fry and the Slurm Factory.
Too polite to say anything, but you're covered with bed sores.
Not covered.